What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of The Blind Side Blitz. I am Jim McPhee, and of course, alongside me is Mr. Joe DiCapita.
What's going on, Blitz Nation? Welcome back once again.
Yeah.
Just wipe your feet. Hit those thumbs up.
Get your shoes off.
And relax. No, just relax. We're here for you guys for all the NFL talk that you need and want. We were brought to you by grumblingsmedia.com. Head over there on to the website. Let you guys can kind of forecast and look it over the site there. Everything from political, entertainment, sports, you name it, it's there. If you're interested in any one of those things, make sure you head over there and check it out. Also on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe while you're there. Make sure you hit those thumbs up. Make sure you share it to everybody you know that loves football. And also, you can check out Rumble.com. We're also there as well. And, of course, anywhere you get your podcasts. Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora, you name it. We're there, too, as well. Drop a follow there. And let's get going.
Yeah.
Fired up.
Super amped up. I'm having a good time. Today has been a good day. I stopped by my neighbor's house. They had a kegerator.
Yeah.
I filled up three growlers with some free beer, so we're
nice.
Good.
Yeah, good.
It's an exciting summer day. It was hot today, too, man. But, yeah, we're super excited.
Yeah, what was
to,
up with that?
I don't 50, know, man.
It was like 50-something percent humidity today.
Yeah,
it felt like it was like 80%. That's what it felt like. It was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we're super excited to be with you guys tonight because we have a very special guest. We haven't talked to this guy in a few years.
It's been a while.
We did an interview with him a while back with our other show, Football on the Know show.
Mm-hmm.
We love having this guy on because, one, he likes all kinds of music and stuff,
Absolutely.
Too, and he loves to talk football. Joining us now on the show from Fox Sports Radio is Mr. Brian Noe. Brian, thank you for joining us tonight.
What's going on, bro?
Hey, good to be with you guys. It's been a few years. What the hell? Did my invitation get lost in the mail? What's going on?
Yeah, I know. It's funny how fast time flies, you know what I'm saying?
I totally get it, man. I'm the same way, so I'm just glad to be with you guys for sure.
Absolutely. I think this is the first time he's actually been able to see us, too, because last time we did our interview, we had different software, and had to do a Zoom meeting somehow and everything and stuff, but now we can see each other face-to-face, so it's all good.
That works well. You guys look great. You clean up well.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it. You look great as well, too.
Hey, man, you seen any concerts lately this summer? Anything been out? Check out some music?
Man, I'm trying to think of the last concert I went to, like an actual, big concert. I couldn't even tell you. I really don't know the last one I saw, but no, it's been a little while, too long. I know probably the last one I saw was Lamb of God.
That's
I know
a good
Mark
one.
Morton a little bit, one of the guitarists, and so I met up with those guys in Indianapolis.
Nice.
And, they're awesome. So that probably was the last one I went to, and that's a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I think even last time on the interview, didn't you say you got the chance to jam with him or something like that one time?
Yeah. He Mark's an awesome dude. He came on the local show I did in Portland for a little while. He jumped on there, and we've hung out a couple of times. We went to a Ravens game a couple of years ago. He's a great dude. So, we haven't had an official jam session, but it was funny on the Portland show because it was all Zoom, right? Everything was Zoom. And Mark, he's experienced. He's like, is this going to sync up right if we're supposed to play a song together? And I'm like, yeah, it'll be fine. Totally not fine at all. There's delay, there's lag, but we just made the most of it. It was fun.
Excellent.
Awesome. Hey, speaking of the Ravens here, John Harbaugh comes on, and he's always been talking up Lamar Jackson lately, too, as well, and say, he's the greatest, and he's going to be the best. But now he's even saying he's going to talk about being the best of all time. And there's a lot of us, that are kind of like, whoa, pump the brakes, boy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing to even talk up your quarterback because, a lot of coaches ain't going to dog their quarterback. They're going to talk him up a little bit. But pump the brakes a little bit. What do you think this is? He's just blowing smoke here? What's going on here?
To me, it's just this happens in sports a lot where your opinions turn into reactions.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a classic example of that. And he explained it before that. He said he talked about people who have played sports used to say, don't read your press clippings. And he was like, press clippings are a thing of the past, but we have phones now. And he's like, if there's anything positive that's said, he just scrolls right past it. He said, that's like candy. It's not even real. But he said the critical comments about Lamar, who he loves, he's like, he takes that personally. And so that's what this is. It's John Harbaugh before bedtime reading who knows, like, I don't know, someone from First Take or whatever, like Undisputed. I don't know who said what, but he said that and he was like, oh, really? And all of a sudden it turned into Lamar's going to be the GOAT when it's all said and done. It's ridiculous, but this is the classic example of an opinion being fueled by a reaction, which has turned into an overreaction.
Yeah, we get it there. Now talk about not only opinions that are out there, but then also facing money. Jordan Love with the contract here. Woo! We had a this was almost shorts worthy and viral when we were talking about this a while back. We're talking extensions, and I was like, the Packers are in a pickle kind of here. They're like, listen, he's been on the shelf for a little bit behind Aaron Rodgers. You get to see this guy for a year, and seeing as though he's been back there so long, now the time's up to make a deal. And so you're kind of rolling the dice, like, what do you do on this? And boom, the money is there. What do you think about this? You think Green Bay just overpaid, or what's the deal?
Yeah, I think that, listen, I get why they did it, and it might end up being the right move. Like, I'll leave that the door open to that possibility. Right. But the way I explain it is like this. If you go on three dates and they're really good dates and you're like, I'm going to ask her to marry me, it might work out fine. But you probably need a little bit more information to make that type of commitment. And that's what I see this being as the Packers. It's the equivalent of three really good dates. We're talking one season as the starting quarterback. And the second half of last season was fantastic. He was arguably the best quarterback the second half of the season. Still just one season, right? And you start looking closer at some of the defenses that he chopped up. They're not in the top half. They're not in, you know, the top two-thirds of the NFL, some of those defenses. So that's where I'm like, look, man, I get why they did it, and it might turn out to be this quote-unquote bargain that a lot of people say it will be. I just need more information about the guy. Like, I've liked what I've seen, but it's such a small sample size to make a $220 million commitment. That's a lot. I would like to have more information about it. And again, it might work out. I'm not saying it sucks and it's going to blow up in their face. Right. It might turn out to be fine. But to me, it's the equivalent of asking for a hand in marriage after three really good dates. That's a little sketchy right there.
Right. I know, right? Because there's no way out on this one. But I get what you're saying, though, too, because as you know, I'm thinking about it, I'm like, maybe they're just looking at it this way. Say we make it the highest paid now. If we missed on this one, okay. But you know what? If we hit, we got them actually in this contract now, and we don't have to try and give them a little bit with bonus and then hit them again in a little bit. You know what I'm saying? So maybe in the long run, it'll hit them, you know, be better.
It might be that. It might be exactly that way. But it's one of these deals where I don't know why teams, they seem to not want to play hardball with a quarterback.
All right,
he's the next guy up. Let's just pay him. It's easier. And they talk themselves into it. It might be fine. He might be our next quarterback of the future and yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's one of these deals where if the Packers played hardball, what would that look like? If they said, we believe in you, we just need more information. It's been one strong season. Maybe we give you a little bit extra money this year, but we're not giving you a monster extension. How would that play out? Jordan Love would, you know, drag his heels. He wouldn't report for a while, or else he would hold in and not practice, and it might drag out and get a little bit messy and ugly. And at the end of the day, I don't think Jordan Love is sitting out this season.
Right.
And so if you just play hardball, he's going to be there week one in Brazil against the Eagles. Yeah. Guaranteed. I don't care what anybody says. And so I think that's the better course of action for the Packers, even though it would be a little bit messy and he's not there for all these training camp practices. Fine, but you're not putting yourself in a position where you could be hamstrung by a bad contract, right? Like, look at the Cardinals with Kyler Murray. Is that contract, is it like, what's the word that they always use where it's a bargain? Is that a bargain contract? Look at Daniel Jones with the Giants. Is that a bargain contract? Like, I'm not saying that Jordan Love's going to be that, but it is. It's a big risk when you don't have more information about the guy.
Absolutely. And it goes along with how, you know, the market goes. It keeps going up and up and up, and it feels like, always the next free agent to be gets the top end dollar somewhere in the top three or something like that, because that's just how it seems to be tracking. But talking about these contracts and these quarterbacks now starting to sign deals, like you're a Finns fan. Let's talk about Tua for a little bit here. He just signed a new deal. 4 years, $212 million approximately extension with $167 million guaranteed. In your opinion, I need to know from a Finns fan here, did the Dolphins make the right decision to sign with him long term?
I hope they did. That's my honest answer. I hope they did, because I can't sit here and say, yes, absolutely they did. I think they might have, right? But there's an argument to be made where, again, play hardball. He's got one more year left in his deal. Is he going to hold out all season? If he plays great, you still have a franchise tag. You have 2 years of franchise tags. That might have been a better way to go about it. And I get it, right? Actions speak louder than words. If you say to Tua or to Jordan Love, hey, we believe in you. We're just not giving you a long-term contract. I mean, what does that tell you? The actions don't support the words that you supposedly believe in me, right? That sort of thing.
Right.
So I think the Dolphins could have played hardball, and they might have been better off in the long run doing that. There's an argument to be made playing hardball could have been the wrong way to go about it. It's like we don't have a crystal ball as far as that goes. Tua played really well last season, played all 17 games. Awesome. But the knock on him is the health concerns, which I wouldn't say he put to bed last year, but it's a huge step in the right direction. And the other big question mark is stepping up in big games. And that's been a consistent trend with Tua. And the playoff loss to the Chiefs was a total dud. Yep. And I know the weather was awful, but he couldn't throw screen passes. Like, I'm not giving him a total free pass when it comes to that. He hooked up with Tyreek Hill on a bomb. And he can't throw a screen pass? Like, come on. Like, it's got to be better. So I hope the Dolphins made the right decision. It's a big commitment to make. And I think until Tua, who's got a reputation, he's injury prone and he hasn't stepped up in big games. Until he, like, does things that are leaps and bounds better than what he's done, his reputation isn't going to change. I think he has the talent to live up to this deal, but I get why many people are like, either this is a mistake or a gigantic risk because of the injuries and the lack of big play in big games.
Right.
Yeah, and that's always the talk again. How are they going to play in the big games? I mean, I get to – you look at that postseason, like a lot of people on defense and offense were injured for the Miami Dolphins. So that's why you weren't able to put as many points, because you got to give it up even for the team of limiting the Chiefs to a little bit and hold them off as much as they could. But then the Chiefs just piled it on in the second half. And if you're not able to put up points, you know, you just got put away. So it was kind of shame for that team, because how they started off early looking really good, you saw what could potentially be, and then just injuries caught up with them.
I know, especially on the defensive side when you don't have Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb. They were a mash unit at the end. But, hey, man, welcome to football. You know, like, injuries happen. There are teams that have been as injured as the Dolphins who produced much better results than the Dolphins. So, and offensively, I mean, you didn't have the equivalent of Chubb and Phillips and this guy and that guy out on the offensive end. It's not like they were down Tyreek and Jalen Waddle and, you know, four offensive linemen. Granted, they had injuries, but they had enough to do better than putting up 7 points against the Chiefs.
Right.
It just got to be better. And Tua was the main reason it wasn't better.
Just to remind you guys again, we are live right now, so we got live comments coming in too on top of this. So we've got Back to the Stone Age, one of our followers that watches us every single week. With pleasure having him on here. He says Tua is a left-handed Chad Pennington, accurate but fragile with a pop gun arm. What do you think of that, Brian?
It's too much. It's too much. Like, listen, I don't know what it is. Jets fans have been tortured for so long. They actually think Chad Pennington was good. You know, have you ever met a Jets fan who was like, hey, it wasn't that good? I've never met a Jets fan. They're like, oh, Chad Pennington. I'm like, Chad Pennington was average at best. You know what I mean? Like, but if you brought up the stats, do you think Chad Pennington led the league in passing yardage ever? Did he come even remotely close? No, I can't imagine he did that. That's what Tua just did last year. So, no, he's much better than Chad Pennington ever was.
Yes,
Yeah, you know the bar is real low when Chad Pennington's right there. You know, this is your bar. You know, I mean, you're like, come on, guys.
That's too low. I can't go that low with Tua. Come on.
That's bad. I'm glad you said that, though. That's great. Bad. Somebody else agrees. Staying with the AFC East, because, again, there's a lot of different quarterback controversy here and there, and some talks about it, too, because Josh Allen here doesn't have Stephon Diggs this year. I mean, they do draft a wide receiver. But, again, out in the media now, now's their chance. They're dogging Josh Allen a little bit again, too. I've said some things where I kind of look at it as I know he's talented. He puts the team all on his shoulders, but to a fault as well. He's known as the gunslinger. And I think the gunslinger term has kind of been a term out there for good quarterbacks that can kind of put up some numbers here, but to save them with the turnovers that they do, almost like they're what's the word here? They're reckless. It's another term for reckless, but you want to say it nicely. So, hey, he's a gunslinger. And that's what I kind of see with Josh Allen. I don't really put him down farther in rankings, but I don't have him number two or like some people do.
I put him number two in the league, in all honesty. And I hear what you're saying. I get it. I thought the Bills GM, Brandon Bean, made a really good argument, where he basically said he was responding to a league executive that said Josh Allen is overrated. And Brandon Bean said, look, man, I'm paraphrasing. He was like, to act like he does, like the bad things are more problematic than the good things are positive. It's just not the reality. And that's the way I look at it, where Josh Allen would be the first one to tell you, what'd he throw, 18 interceptions last year? 18 or 19, something like that. He'd tell you that's too many. He'd be the first one to tell you that. But when you look at the end of the day and he accounts for 44 touchdowns, that's a lot of production. And so if you look at the last 4 years, Mahomes leads the league with the most touchdowns. He's got 143. Josh Allen is second in line with 137. And so I totally agreed with what Brandon Bean had to say, where this talk about Josh Allen being overrated is silly. I think that, yes, to your point, there's a bit of the Josh Allen experience where he makes a stupid decision or makes a reckless play, and you're like, Josh, what are you doing, man? You don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. But the running ability mixed with the passing ability, there's too much production to say that the negative plays hurt you worse than the positive plays help you. So at the end of the day, it is a net positive for the Bills. And he's just putting up numbers that are too good to say that he's not top five. He's easily top five. We could get into the nuts and bolts of where, but I've got him number two solidly in the NFL. He's just that good.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, so staying in the division, but we're going to go back to your Fins here. The Dolphins made some moves in the offseason. They drafted the personnel that they drafted, and they ended up picking Odell up, and it looks like they improved their offensive line. So far in this offseason that they have going on, now we're into training camp, do you think that they did enough and proved enough in different areas to challenge for this division as of this season?
I do, because it's not so much – loving what the Dolphins have, it's not loving the rest of the division. You know, like the Bills are going to be a good team. And as much as I believe in Josh Allen, like Khalil Shakir, he's the only wide receiver who's caught a pass from Josh Allen. Yeah. That's pretty crazy, right? Like that's pretty insane to think about. And the Jets, I think Aaron Rodgers is going to have a very strong season. I don't know where the bandwagon Jets fans have gone. Like going into last year, they were the trendy team. And it's like Rodgers gets hurt immediately. And now that he's back with a real defense and all the same factors, I can't find anybody on the bandwagon. I think the Jets can be good, but I think that the Bills, Dolphins, and Jets are very evenly matched. You know?
Right.
So as far as that goes, I don't think that the Bills or the Jets are greatly outdistancing themselves from the Dolphins. And, you know, I think with the firepower they have on offense, it's really strong. And I hope that Chubb and Phillips can come back and The defensive line worries me. They've got a bunch of one-year deal guys, and yeah, there are holes, but I just don't look at the Bills and the Jets as being like greatly better than them. I just think they're all very evenly matched. So do the Finns have a shot? Yeah, absolutely. They've got a shot in the AFC East.
Well I think said. I think the Jets fans are holding out until after four plays this coming season. And they're like, all right, we made it.
Yeah. You ever see like the old Westerns where there's like tumbleweed rolling by and it's like the whistling, the yeah. That's what I feel like the Jets bandwagon has become. There's just no one around. Like, what has changed? Aaron Rodgers is not Lamar Jackson. You know what I mean? He doesn't run around. He's not this athletic specimen. If he were, if he played like that, I get the skepticism based on the Achilles. But that's not his game. He uses his athleticism. He doesn't rely on it. So it's like, why would you have so many doubts about Rodgers and the Jets? It's still Rodgers with a real defense. They won seven games last year. This blows my mind. Their quarterbacks accounted for 11 touchdown passes. That's it. That's all. And they won seven games. You think Aaron Rodgers is going to throw more than 11 touchdown passes this year? Yeah, absolutely. If he's healthy, he will.
Yeah.
And how many more wins could that equate to? I think the Jets could absolutely challenge for double-digit wins.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, too, as well. So you think the Patriots is going to be the bottom barrel of this division then? Yeah,
I do. They just they got a long way to go. Yeah. First-year head coach, a lot of holes on the roster. I mean, maybe they're slightly better than we're all anticipating, but to what degree, right? Like, what's their ceiling? Seven wins? That might be their ceiling. So, no, they're not going to do anything significant.
Yeah, they turned the page there. You know, now they're in rebuild mode. They're still trying to figure things out. They just drafted their quarterback and whatnot. But the Jets, you know, they've done a lot this offseason. Definitely have executed and found different veterans to plug in holes. And now that they have Rodgers back healthy again, just like you were saying, like, what's the end result there for the Jets? Like, they definitely are going to be challenging for this division, right?
Yeah.
How much greater do you think this Jets roster has improved? Now, has it improved more on the offensive side to help Robert Saleh's defense to where that could possibly catapult them over the top?
Yes, I think so. I mean, the first part of this is having Rodgers for what Jets fans hope is the entire season. Like, compare that to four plays. You know, like, just –
yeah.
Just think about how mammoth of an improvement that will be. And then when you sprinkle it in, I'm curious about Tyron Smith, right? Morgan Moses. Mm-hmm. If those guys are healthy, that's a huge if. I get it, especially with Tyron Smith, who's really good when he's healthy. The problem is he's just not healthy consistently, right? It's a lot like Teron Armstead with the Dolphins. Yeah. It's like, and that guy's good. When he's healthy, he's really, really good. It's just he's on the shelf a lot. And so with Tyron Smith, Morgan Moses, you got a retooled offensive line. Health is the biggest question mark.
Yeah.
And that's a tough thing to, like, see coming, if you will, right? It's a tough thing to predict. How do you predict health? And with offensive linemen like Tyron Smith, you probably say he's going to miss a good four or five games. Something like that. Teron Armstead probably going to miss four or five games. And that's not a great spot to be in. But if they're blessed with relatively good health, I really like what the Jets have on paper.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, all the health questions, they bring in Mike Williams. all the health questions. So you got offensive linemen. You got a quarterback. You got a wide receiver. All these health concerns. But, man, I don't think it makes sense to walk in saying, they're going to be a mash unit. How do we know that for sure? What if they're blessed with better health than what we anticipate? They could be really good. I would not be surprised at all.
Yeah, you even saw them in the draft. They compensated for that move in the future with adding Tyron Smith, with drafting left tackle Olu Fashanu.
Yeah.
They're hoping that – I mean, the great hope for the Jets fans is that he just flat out beats Tyron Smith in training camp. But if he doesn't, he can still learn underneath him, and then when it does come time, maybe that Tyron Smith gets injured, he could possibly slide right in and they don't miss a beat. That's the hope, right,
for Jets. And that's the thing, too, is think about it with wide receiver. I mentioned Mike Williams, but they drafted Malachi Corley, You got a lot of Deebo Samuel comparisons. And if you watched him at Western Kentucky, those are some good comparisons. That guy is a bowling ball. It is hard to bring that guy down. And look, man, that's a great point where it's not just the guys slated to start. It's you have – that's a first-round pick in Fashanu, right? It's a third-round pick in Corley. What if those guys are big contributors? You know, like Xavier Gibson had the punt return to beat the Bills. Who was talking about him? Who's talking about this undrafted guy from Stephen F. Austin, right? Like, so there are surprises to be had, and that's a great point where it doesn't make sense just to look at the vets who are injury-prone. It's like, who's behind them? Those guys could hit. Those guys could be contributors. So that's a great point to consider that also.
With the players now, I mean, now that we're in the training camp, we got some holdouts. We got like
a new term
with hold-ins now in the NFL in hopes of getting a new extension. What do you think is the best way to get a deal done sooner for some of these players? Is it just like kind of showing up, let the agent take care of it? Or do you think holding out until something gives for either side? What's your opinion on that?
This is not a cop-out answer. I know it'll sound like it, but it really does depend.
I knew it.
You know, it depends. It depends on the organization. Yeah, like it depends on the player, depends on the organization. If you show good faith by at least showing up to practice, even though you're not participating, some organizations really like that. And that helps. That helps the deal get done. Sometimes it's I don't know. I don't want to be too crude, but it's like, you know, it's dating, right? It's giving up the milk, right? Like that sort of thing, right? Like
milk before you buy the cow, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So maybe if you're showing up to practice without practicing, some organizations are like, this doesn't help his cause at all, right? Like, so I really do. I think it does depend on each organization, on each situation, where I do believe there are some times where a hold-in can help. I think there are some times where a hold-in doesn't make any bit of difference whatsoever.
Gotcha.
But at the end of the day, it's all about leverage. And if you look at, say, Brandon Ayuk with the Niners, this is their all-in moment. He's got really solid leverage. Because they don't want to move on. They don't want to get a draft pick for him. This is going all in this year, right? And that doesn't include dealing him for a 2025 draft pick. You know what I mean? So he's got leverage. So whether it's a hold in, a hold out, whatever, it all comes down to leverage. Who has it and who doesn't? That's what really gets a deal done.
Yeah, and I agree with you on the Brandon Ayuk. It's like he's got more leverage because, again, with him, that's making that run to the Super Bowl again. And on any other team, he's their starter, number one, easy. It's just the fact that they've got George Kittle and Deebo Samuel and all these guys, that he's like a 1A, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, if it wasn't for him, they wouldn't even make the Super Bowl because that was a sure pick if it doesn't hit off the face mask of the Detroit Lions safety. And he has the control to get that and get that catch right there.
Not to mention you got Christian McCaffrey who just signed a bigger portion contract. He got $20 million, you know, as a running back. So how do you think that makes Ayuk feel? And he's like, hey, where's my money?
Yeah, that's the tricky thing too is what you guys are saying is – you're going to have to pay Brock Purdy next offseason.
Yep.
And that's where it gets really tricky, right? Like, so I understand that's what the Niners are thinking. It's a good problem to have. They've got a lot of really good players, but you got to make some tough decisions. You can't pay everybody top dollar at their position.
For sure.
You got this Purdy deal hanging over your head. That's what's going on with Ayuk. And the other thing, and you guys alluded to it, is – like Ayuk with a lot of other teams is putting up bigger numbers.
Yeah.
But with this Niners offense, he's putting up good numbers, but is he putting up numbers good enough to get the type of payday that he's looking for? That's where it gets really tricky. Where the Niners are like, you're really good, but we're talking 32 or north of 32 per year. Like the numbers aren't quite there, not because of his lack of talent, because they have so many talented players within that offense. That's where it gets really tricky is the Niners would actually be overpaying for a guy because the production isn't quite the same as it would be with Ayuk, I believe, in other places.
Yeah, and we even talked about, like, the contract for Christian McCaffrey, but apparently reports out of San Fran was that they even offered him $26 million a year, which me and Jim have talked on the show before, and we thought, well, that's kind of fair for Ayuk, right? But he hasn't even accepted it.
Yeah, it's tough. Where what were a couple of the deals? I think it was Amon-Ra got 30, mm-hmm. and I forget which receiver. I don't remember if it's AJ Brown. Maybe is at 32. Justin Jefferson's at 35. Yeah. But looking at that 30, 32-ish, that's the question. Is we get like little bits and pieces. We'll get Ayuk posting training camp footage of the Washington Commanders and Jaden Daniels, but you won't hear, I want $33 million per year. Nothing, right? Like, so we're guesstimating. We're guesstimating where he wants to be, where the Niners want to be, and I don't know that for sure because that stuff happens behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. But if he's wanting 33, 34, it's like, I get the Niners' reluctance there. But if the Niners are saying, we want you at 28, I get Ayuk saying, are you serious right now? Come on. So I really don't know where the numbers are exactly.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and one thing, if the Niners do have something in their pocket too as well, I think I even saw on that show Receivers, like Brock Purdy's record without Debo in there. If he stepped up big in those games, then it would even make a difference when Debo's not in there because they did lose when Debo was not in. So that's the difference. Now, if all of a sudden they still win and Ayuk's putting up the numbers, then he's got something in his ball in his part too.
I'll tell you, man, that's the show I want to hear. I want to watch. Receiver has been fantastic. Yes. I want Negotiator. You know, that's what I want. I want to hear.
You want
the Niners are like, you're great, but XYZ, right? Like, that's what I – and Ayuk is – his agent is comes with his you know, argument, that would be tremendous. I would love to hear the negotiations between a team and the agent and what the team says, like right behind closed doors. When it comes down to it, and this is numbers and this is business, they got to bring up these uncomfortable facts like, hey, he's great, but he played 12 games or whatever, right? Like, I would love to hear those conversations.
It's interesting, too.
Peyton Manning, if you're listening, this is the next show. Yes. Right? I know he's got it right here. You got credit to him.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, too, because we got a little snippet about, like, the Giants that were being covered by HBO in their offseason. Mm-hmm. You got to hear some of their phone calls, which was actually pretty interesting, about Saquon Barkley and how much are you looking for? Well, we're in this range. And you kind of got a little bit of banter back and forth between the organization and the agent, which was really cool to see. But it's not in totality, right? We don't get all the details. So you're right. That would make for an amazing show to watch for sure.
Yeah, I thought offseason with the Giants was going to be pretty lame. I've enjoyed it. I thought it's been pretty good. I love what Dan Morgan, when he was talking to Joe Shane about the Brian Burns trade.
It
ended up happening. And it's just such a nonchalant, like, hey, how about a couple of ones for Burns? It's like, we got to hear what that sounds like. That's really interesting. Joe Shane's talking to Saquon, and it's like, this was the beginning of the end. Like, yeah, go ahead, test the market, and you're going to give us a chance to match, right? Okay, cool. Yeah. It's been really interesting to hear that. So, yeah, next phase, negotiator. I want the negotiations or Pro Football Hall of Fame, right? Like, I would love to see behind-the-scenes footage of someone saying, no, Charles Haley shouldn't be a Hall of Famer. And then Charles Haley gets to hear that and react to it. Oh, my God, that would be amazing.
Man, I love it. He's got all kinds of show ideas.
Yeah, of course. That's why we got him on here.
He's the man. That's right. If you guys haven't known yet, Brian Noe, you got to check him out. Noe Show. He also does a show on the weekends with Jeff Schwartz, too, as well. I've heard a little bit of that on Fox Sports Radio, so you got to check him out. Joe,
sticking with the training camp theme here, and we just talked about hold-in, hold-outs and all that, but there's a couple of players in – different situations, both of them separately. Wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase, you got defensive end Trey Hendrickson, still absent from Bengals training camp. Do you think that situation for just one or maybe both kind of gets resolved? Because they are two different type of situations where Chase is on the towards the end of his deal. looking for a new extension. And then you got Hendrickson, which that whole storyline kind of took a spin where he was contemplating retirement and wants his new extension, and he's okay with retiring if they don't give it to him. So what's your take on all that?
Man, if I knew what the Bengals were thinking and what they were doing, I think my football knowledge would be so much better than it is right now. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a weird organization. Look at it like this. A couple of organizations. Look at the Lions, the Cowboys, and the Bengals. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And there are some differences, don't get me wrong, but the Lions are like, hey, Amon-Ra St. Brown is really good. Let's pay him. Penei Sewell is really good. Let's pay him. And it happened early in the offseason. It was painless. They came to a compromise. They signed the deal. It was done. They moved on. Meanwhile, the Cowboys with Micah Parsons, with CeeDee Lamb, with Dak Prescott, it's almost August. We're still talking about these deals not being made. You brought up Ja'Marr Chase and Trey Hendrickson. Mm-hmm. I don't know when those deals are going to be signed. They're going to be signed at some point, but there are some organizations, I swear, that make it as painful as possible. Yeah. And I don't know if it helps. You know, if I'll put it this way, if Ja'Marr Chase finally ends up signing a deal and it's incredibly team friendly, you could look and say, okay, it paid off. If he signs like one of the top of the line, like Justin Jefferson-ish type deals, it's got to be like, guys, why did you do this months ago and save yourself some pain along the way? But some organizations just, I don't know what it is. They think that they're helping themselves, but I think they just get in the way of themselves at times.
It's to your point, too. Like the Lions, they also just gave an extension to Taylor Decker just recently. That just got announced for $60 million. Mm-hmm. So it's like there is an organization where you just pointed out that they're not wasting time. Listen, if they want the guys long term, they get the deals done earlier. You know, they're not fooling around. Where you're right. You know, you got CeeDee Lamb with the Cowboys, like that's still lingering on. He's not showing up. He's just working out by himself. So yeah, it's definitely a very difficult situation. I feel like for both sides to figure it out, but also at the same time, you're right. There are some of those organizations that kind of just drag their feet in the mud about it all.
Yeah, I know. It's strange. And that's the thing, man. We were talking about like overrated, underrated with the Josh Allen deal. I'll tell you what, Trey Hendrickson, he is an underrated pass rusher. He is really good. He puts up numbers, sacks, QB hits, QB pressures. Yeah. And he's not going to get brought up with some of the guys with bigger names. He is a really good – he's – very important for that Bengals defense.
How did the Saints let him go?
Yeah, right?
I don't get that.
Yeah. I know. We were just saying it the other day. Like, I'm like, this guy is just one of the underrated guys out there that nobody – I mean, some people do. If you really do and you watch football, you kind of know this guy. Right. But in the headlines, there's nothing said of him, about him at all. You know, everybody's like, Parsons this or this, that, and not even there.
Yeah, I know. And maybe some of it – I'm not saying it's right, but some of it is just the way he looks. He's more of like he's not a sexy pass rusher. That's not a knock on him. Right? Like he's not like Barry Watts or Miles Garrett or like a blend of finesse and physicality. Right. He's really effective. And it doesn't have to look awesome. He doesn't have to be, you know, like a poster guy or a fathead guy. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, what are you doing production wise? And he has been so productive that that's an important player for them for sure.
All right. To wrap it up here, I got one last question here. You talk about the Lions. Everybody was on that bad bandwagon coming up to this last season, but they did perform and it kind of showed everybody, yes, here we go. The Lions are for real. Is there any team out there this season that everybody's talking about that you're kind of almost like, yo, pump the brakes on this. I'm not so sure about this.
There is one team that I just wonder, very public team, the Houston Texans.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Look, man, they got a lot going for them. I get it. C.J. Stroud was unbelievable last season. Mm-hmm. And then you get Stephon Diggs. You go out and you get Danielle Hunter to go along with Will Anderson Jr. Like, you got a lot going for yourself, but it seems almost universal. You know, their season win total is 9.5. And it seems like almost everyone's like, 10 wins? Give me a break. The only question I have, are they going to get to 15 wins or 16 wins? Like, that's what it feels like. And that's what I worry about is just when it seems to be unanimous, like the Texans are certified. This team, look out. They're on the rise. That's where the NFL kind of taps you on your shoulder and they're like, it's not that easy. And so I wonder, again, they've got a lot going for them, but are they going to be for sure AFC South champs, for sure a playoff team, for sure at least a 10-win team? I'm not as sure as the public seems to be. And when it seems to be so one-sided, that's why I'm like Bill Krakenberger is a sports handicapper. He's great at what he does, real sharp guy. And he says, God protects the bookmakers. And I can't help but think of Crack with all this Texans love. It's like, right. Is God somehow going to protect the Texans, the bookmakers, the Texans win 8 or 9 games? I wouldn't be surprised at all, man. I love them on paper. Right. But look, man, the NFL is not played on paper.
Nope, definitely absolutely. Not. It's going to be the bonus round. I got one more because we have one of our favorite Blitz Nation guys on here on the live chat with us. It's William Del Pilar. Here he is. And he says, hey, what about Russell Wilson? What's Brian's take on his expectations with him this season? And what are your thoughts regarding the situation that happened with Sean Payton last season?
Hey, man, look at you guys, interactive and everything. Yeah. This is beautiful. That's what
we
do.
We note ourselves and highlight as the most interactive sports talk show on the internet right now. So.
No, that's awesome. That's really cool. Well, a couple of things. Two things with Russ and the Steelers, right? One of each. Look, I get the first year in Denver was just a disaster. It's like, it seems like no one ever forgave Russ for that. You know, like last season, if you just look at numbers, if I just gave you the blind, you know, litmus test and said, hey, are these numbers pretty good? Would you like these numbers? Would you sign up for them? 26 touchdowns, 8 picks, passer rating is 98, you know, so you're at least in the top 10 with that, right? Would you sign up for that? That's pretty good, right? Like that's what Russell Wilson did last year. And we acted like it just sucked. It was the worst thing ever.
Right.
Okay, Sean Payton, he didn't like him. He wanted him to be better. Fine. But I just think that the first year in Denver was so bad for Russ. It's as if we didn't really watch him last year. And he improved greatly. And he got zero credit whatsoever. And the other thing with the Steelers, and it's wild. It's a little bit like the Jets. If you look at what they did team-wise, their quarterbacks, the three-headed monster of Kenny Pickett, Mitch Trubisky, and Mason Rudolph, they combined for 13 touchdown passes.
Okay?
And they won 10 games. All right. So I'm not expecting Russell Wilson to go there and be prolific, but can he do better than 13 touchdown passes if he's the quarterback all season long? I absolutely think he can. But look, man, it's a little bit like Tua in a weird way. Once you establish a reputation, you got to move mountains to change your reputation. And the reputation for Russ after the Seahawks is all about that first year in Denver. There were such high hopes, and he fell flat on his face. That's just what it was. But to not look at last year being much better and to think that, oh, the Steelers, what are they doing? Can he not be better than Mason Rudolph and Mitch Trubisky? Like, what are we talking about right now? Yeah, I think he can be better than that. And I think the Steelers can still challenge to at least have a winning record, which they've always had with Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, Brian, it's been a pleasure having you on. I got one last question. I made it real simple, too. You know, you do fantasy football, right?
I don't. I've been retired forever. Yeah, I don't. It's great. I love it, but there's a dark side to it. I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. The two things I hate is I hate having to root against your team. Like gambling-wise, I can control that. It's like if the Dolphins are playing, I'm just not betting on the other team. I can control, right? Yeah. Like I don't want to root against my team. So I don't like it if, you know, I've got – Stephon Diggs is my fantasy wide receiver with the Texans, and I'm like, it'd be nice if he scored a touchdown. I don't like that. And the other part is, if I have Tyreek Hill on my fantasy team, and Jaylen Waddle scores the touchdown, as a Dolphins fan, I want to be happy. Yeah. But I'd be lying to you if I'm feeling like it'd be nice if Tyreek caught that touchdown. Yeah, I can't be fully happy. That's why.
Yes.
It's that's funny. Me. Because, like, for me, like, it, mm-hmm. regardless of what happens for me, I always root for my Raiders. I'm a Raiders fan. So I root for my Raiders fan. So even if I have, like, Patrick Mahomes as my quarterback in fantasy, I want to win my game, my fantasy game. But more than anything, I want my Raiders to win. I don't care about fantasy for that week.
Yeah.
That week's going to kill me. So that's how I look at it. So yeah. I always root for my Raiders regardless. And then my fantasy team the rest of the time when they're not facing Patrick Mahomes.
You're better than me, man, because I want to win everything. You know, I want the Dolphins to win, but I also want Stephon Diggs to have two touchdown catches that didn't win the Texans the game. But right, like, so I win my fantasy thing. The Dolphins win. I want to win everything, and it's hard to
You can have both. It's possible.
I'm with you, Brian. For me, it's the definition of craziness because that's what you're expecting. You're like, all right, I want to win still, but I need to like stop at the goal line and have my guy run it in, or this. It's in your defense. Oh, it's too much. I bailed out. So I'm with you on that one.
I do love fantasy players though, right? Because they do know injuries.
Yeah.
If you're like, hey, Justin Jefferson. He's got a hip. They know every injury, man. They know the timetable. They know. I always ask fantasy players for injury updates. You know, they're all over that.
Excellent. Well, yeah, the guy that started KFFL back in the day is the guy that runs our media company right now. So these guys are big on fantasy sports, and they know it all here, too. So we'll be diving into that this season, too, as well. Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
Sir.
It's been too long. We had a lot of fun, like awesome. We always do. You look great, man. Dude, you don't age at all, man. It's crazy. What the hell are you doing, man?
I'm actually 82. Thank you for saying that.
Man. Nice. And I listened to, again, your show there with Jeff Schwartz on Fox Sports Radio. It's great. And I like the mix because you still got that youthful sound and you're energetic. And, like, Jeff Schwartz got that kind of gritty, like, hey, you got a slow.
I know. I never thought of it like that. Yeah, he's a little Barry White-like, isn't he?
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I don't know, Brian. We're going to do this. It's like, what?
You're right. You know, he's from California, so he's got a little bit of the Cali cool thing going on. Just kind of gruff. Yep. That's the old lineman in him. But, yeah, I'll be back with Schwartz. Mm-hmm. We'll be doing Countdown to Kickoff. We'll start it up August 17th. So Saturdays and Sundays leading up to kickoff. That's where we'll be. So really looking forward to that.
I'll be looking forward to listening to that.
Maybe we can get you both on next time.
Yes, maybe. Next time during the season.
That'd be fun, man. I'm all up for it. You know, Jeff, he's a big shot, A-lister, you know, total diva. Don't let anybody sway you, right? He's a wide receiver in an offensive lineman's body. But hopefully that'd be great. That'd be a lot of fun.
Nice. Yes, sir. Awesome, man. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next time.
All right, man. I'll see you guys.
Later, man.
See you. Oh man, Brian, no! What a good time, man! It's like I'm smiling. Like, my cheeks hurt. When you know it's a good interview, Joe.
Right.
Like we're having a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. Not to mention, man. I mean, it was good to catch up with Brian. We caught up an hour interview, but also we dove in hardcore into all kinds of situations throughout the NFL, into training camp. With his Dolphins, with that AFC East division, it was a lot of fun. I can't wait to get him and possibly Schwartz on again.
Yeah, we might have to offer Schwartz something. You know, what's his favorite M&Ms or something? Like, we have to do something like that. That's what he's saying. He's like, he's a diva. We got to do something. What do we got to give him? We'll talk to Brian. It's like, yo, what's he like? Man?
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? I talked nice to Bob. Said he had a nice grind. He's in a sexy California voice. Oh, man. So, yeah, thank you so much to everybody here watching with us. We got a lot of show left over. Brian Noe from Fox Sports Radio is just on with us. Love that dude. He's from South Bend. He's a big Notre Dame fan. So maybe when college football gets started, we'll talk a little bit about that. Joe, right now, before we get into our next segment, why don't you tell everybody how you can find more episodes like this and interviews with Brian Noe?
I am so glad you asked, Jim, because it is so simple. I'll tell you, and it helps us out tremendously. Really appreciate the love out there. We really appreciate everybody tuning in. And don't forget, guys, we are live. So when we are live Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, make sure you tune in, comment down below. We are going to react to your comment. If you got a question, ask it. It doesn't even have to be about something we're talking about. Could be about a team that you're into. Could be about a situation. We're going to answer it. We're going to react to it. And that goes for any show. But that all being said, head over to YouTube. Make sure you hit that subscribe button on Grumblings Media. That channel right there is the one-stop shop you need to go to for all sports, political, or entertainment shows. They're all there. Make sure you hit the thumbs up. I just lost my camera. Make sure that you also – oh, we're going off the rails here.
Yeah.
Make sure you also share to everybody that you know. And also you can follow them on grumblingsmedia.com. You can head over to the website. If you're not a big fan of YouTube, you can head over to the website. You can also head over to rumble.com, drop a follow there, as well as any reviews that you might want to include. And then anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora, we're always there as well.
Yeah, that's right, Joe. See, he said we are live, and we do this on the fly. And, you know, my family's away with us right now. So, no, you look perfect right there. You're just the natural for that. And my dog is down here with us here in the studio. So it is a crazy time here, and he's trying to get crazy with the cords and everything like that. So if this is why some people should actually check out the YouTube version. If you're listening to the audio, which is cool too on Pandora and all those other ones, it's cool to listen to us and we sound good. And I get that, but the camera version is really cool and you get to see all this other extra stuff here.
I mean, we do realize that you love listening to our golden pipes.
Yes, that's right.
But you know, if you also want the visual, I mean, that way you can kind of interact with us, see how we react. Mm-hmm. So it's all good and fun here.
All right, Joe, we've been doing the reviews, the previews actually for the upcoming season. All the divisions in the AFC are gone. We did all that stuff before. Now let's get to the NFC, and let's start it off with the NFC East. And
this is your division, Jim.
It's my division.
You own this one.
I own this division. That's right. And unfortunately, it has been owned by the Dallas Cowboys for a couple of seasons, and then the Philadelphia Eagles, and then every team but mine. So let's get right into it. We got America's team, the Dallas Cowboys. Joe, take it away.
Yeah, Cowboys. Let's take a look at their wide receiving core right here. So we all know that CeeDee Lamb is still holding out, still waiting on a contract extension, and rightfully so. Guy is getting at the end of his rookie deal. Looking to cash in, wants to be paid like the likes of maybe Justin Jefferson and whatnot. But we'll have to wait and see how that all pans out, because the Cowboys, they're in a very tight situation when it comes to money. But they also have a guy who's been with the Cowboys since 22, and Jalen Tolbert, who looks like he's going to take a step upwards into that starting role and try to make a name for himself there. You still got Brandon Cooks returning for another season there. After that, it's kind of like a mishmash grouping of wide receivers all trying out to not only just make the team, but even to get some playing time coming into this season. Guys for the likes of Kevontae Turpin, who's kind of been this returning specialist for the Cowboys and is definitely gifted with speed and quickness for sure. Very hard to tackle in the open field, but he's small in stature, so I feel like that's kind of like his limitation at the NFL level, but I still would be curious to maybe utilize him in like a very creative offense where he could do jet sweeps out of the backfield. You kind of just like mix it up where you have him line up in the backfield and go out to the flat, just catch a pass and then run with it after the catch. So, I just think that after that starting lineup, your top three, there's a lot of question marks after that. Are they going to be able to hold up for the long term of this season? Because let's just say, for example, Cooks goes down with an injury. It could happen. And now who's going to step up in his place? Are they going to be able to match his, you know, talent level? And that's the big question mark here is after that lineup, it kind of falls right off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you bring up the wide receivers, Joe. I mean, these wide receivers have been good all last year. They had the number one offense in the league, which is kind of surprising again because, Mike McCarthy and his offense, you know, I thought, again, everybody had it kind of figured out. He's pretty predictable. I was surprised. So that's one of the things I was wrong about, and I'll admit that. But, again, Brandon Cooks did a really well job. You know, CeeDee Lamb doing what he does. So Brandon Cooks, again, kind of that unsung hero, like I kind of said a bunch of times last year, putting it up there when CeeDee Lamb wasn't there. Brandon Cooks was always there to deliver. But again, it's about the young guys. I think a lot of people really do want to see Turpin out there get some more plays, get more involved. And Mike McCarthy has said that he's going to do some of that. Yes, he's electric on the kick returns and punt returns and stuff right. like that. But getting him involved in this offense, and especially seeing with his legs and things like that, I wouldn't be surprised if you see him on more of those jet sweeps. So I don't know if they have to worry about injuries so much. I haven't seen him really get injured, but if they do, yes, that could potentially be a problem.
He hasn't had the greatest track record when it comes in terms of his career. He mm-hmm. has been banged up. He's missed times with other teams and even missed seasons. So he had a healthy year last year, and that yeah. was great for him and the Cowboys, but yes. who knows? Another year coming in, he is getting older. You know, he's not in his prime, so to speak. So, you always got to kind of worry about that with any player in your starting lineup.
Yep.
Going into the offensive line here. Now, this was a concern for some people because they haven't believed in the Cowboys offensive line for quite some time. Yes, they still got all pro Zach Martin at guard still. They have Terrence Steele to lock up the right tackle spot, which Steele has been a pleasant surprise since coming to the league in 2020. He's got that right side locked down. But then when you start to look at the left side of it, where they drafted Tyler Guyton in the first round this year, he's penciled in the start. Now, this is a guy that isn't like kind of like pro, he's not really pro ready. He's kind of like this talented player that needs to develop. He needs to grow in order to be that starter for them at left tackle. And that, to me, is a little shaky. I think he's got quickness, he's got athleticism, but on the other hand, he doesn't have the greatest of anchor, he doesn't have the greatest strength, and I think at the next level, now you're playing with the big boys, where you're going to have to face the likes of, you know, Trey Hendrickson, you're going to face the likes of Max Crosby, you're going to face T.J. Watt and all these guys, Miles Garrett, and the list goes on, where they're going to really test you every single snap, so that's a little concerning for me. And then you go into the left guard spot, Tyler Smith, who was thought originally to kick out to left tackle, but they decided to draft Tyler Guyton, and they're going to keep Smith at guard, and hopefully he keeps continuing getting better. And then the center spot is, to me, honestly, the biggest weakness. And Brock Hoffman, coming over from San Fran, who hasn't been a starter, is penciled to be the starter, but there's no, like, what's the experience? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. What do we got going on here? So maybe the Cowboys seen something in him, and they obviously believe in him enough to put him in there. But they did take a center in the draft in the third round in Cooper Beebe, who was seen by many as the top center coming out, despite other people what they were thinking. So Cooper Beebe is a really solid player, good player. Who knows? Maybe he wins that job in training camp, and they look a little bit more comfortable going into the season. So to me, there's some ups and downs with this offensive line. I think there's more weakness on the left side. Right side, I think, is rock solid. But going into the season, that to me is what I'm going to be looking to watch for the Cowboys.
Right, right. And you pretty much said it all here, too. Again, left side is probably the most suspect. And then at center, too, you know, something a little different here. Zach Martin's going to still stay true. Terrence Steele, you're locked in right there. And I think that's key for them to protect Dak Prescott here. The one thing I think is kind of funny, maybe prematurely getting into it, is that the fact that he decided to move on to Tony Pollard too, when he had 1,000 yards rushing, you know, in this Mike McCarthy offense, I was blown away. Cause again, you don't traditionally see that. You see back when he even had like Amon Green and stuff, you know, he did well with that offense, but nothing like 1,000 yard rusher consecutively and things like that.
Right.
So, the fact that they move on with him and go and bring Zeke Elliott back, Zeke is slender. He's a little more, you know, drop some of that weight and stuff like that.
We'll
too.
See.
But I don't know how, if you really gain there on the running back position now.
No, you don't gain anything. But going back to Tony Pollard, they couldn't afford him. It was that simple. They just couldn't afford to keep him. They had to make sure, like, future contracts like Dak Prescott that they're still working on, like CeeDee Lamb, they still have to figure that out. They knew that they would have to allocate money elsewhere to a different position for the future. So Tony Pollard, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. They had to let him walk. They couldn't afford him, and that's why he's gone. But, yeah, you're right. Ezekiel Elliott, is it the sexy pick? Maybe for some Cowboys fans that are ride or die with Elliott, they you know, he is a huge fan favorite there in Dallas. So people are probably like, some people are comfortable with it, then I really do think that there's other fans that are like, oh man, we got him back, but now he's like got more tread on the tires. He's a little older. He took a little bit of a pounding in New England. Is he the same dynamic running back that we had in Pollard? Absolutely not. He's not a guy that's a playmaker, really. He's more like just a power back, a guy who's going to move the chains. He's going to get the hard yardage. And maybe in the red zone, he'll plow in for the touchdown, but a guy that's not going to make any dynamic plays for you, not going to run 40, 50, 60 yards down the football field and, you know, break it open. So yeah, there's a little bit of a difference there. And I say a little bit, but I mean a lot of it. And then the backup behind him, there's a couple of them now. Deuce Vaughn, who played last season, got some playing time, kind of like the your mini-me of running backs, very short in stature, but a guy who's very strong, keeps his balance well. I look for him to kind of maybe get a little bit more playing time than he did last year in a running back by rotation scenario, because they did sign Royce Freeman from free agency, bringing him in. Rico Dowdle played also last season, but I feel like there was a little bit more life with him. He's more of like this like tough, gritty, power back slash guy that can make you miss too. And I really liked his spunk. I really liked how he ran very hard for the Cowboys last season. So, I mean, honestly, as long as they keep this a rotation, I think you're going to get something a little bit different from each running back, and that's going to throw off some defenses from time to time. So maybe they could get by with this kind of a rotation.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I see you there too. And Dak Prescott, again, he, even though this guy, again, hasn't been able to have that playoff success, it's, you know, it's all on his shoulders. It's partially some of his fault and stuff like that too. How do you have this number one ranked offense, you know, having, yeah, you know, the great season yards, you know, again, if you look at his stats,
amazing,
yearly,
they're amazing.
You take out the 2 years that he was banged up, he's automatically getting 4,500 plus yards, mm-hmm, and not too many turnovers. Again, one bad year thrown in a little bit.
Had one terrible year.
Overall, not too shabby. And again, it really makes me sick to my stomach to talk well about
quarterback.
I think I almost just threw up in my mouth, Joe. I mean, it was crazy. But he's got to step up here for them. Again, yes, I get it, to, you know, for a little bit into the playoffs. But I think then when you get to there, it's about coaching. We've seen coaches fail in the playoffs too as well. And that's kind of been Mike McCarthy's thing too as well, you know, for his you know, career, I guess. You can put him on the blame in some of that. When you come in there with a team, like I said, who's your top five in offense, top five in defense, and you still can't come out of there with a win, there's some issues there above what the players are doing. Scheme, things like that. But Dak Prescott, as long as that contract thing here is looming, it's a very interesting thing that we're going to see throughout this season. Because we talked about this team with how they need to they get so many good players a lot of times. This is a question you have, just like with the San Francisco 49ers. You can't afford to pay them all. Like you said, Tony Pollard was a victim to, you know, the money issue, the cap. And now you got to pay CeeDee Lamb. And what's Dak Prescott going to get? Because like I said, the numbers are there. They're showing you there. But he hasn't had the playoff success. And how much does that attribute to what, you know, he is going to be getting here this season and what the team's going to be able to afford? And what moves on, you know, for him in his career?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is the money game. You know, everyone's trying to figure out, will Dak sign with the Cowboys? It sounds like out of Dallas right now, currently, that talks are going well. Nobody has any animosity on either side. It's kind of one of these things where, like, we're just meeting up like good friends and we're going to hash this thing out. It sounds like they are coming to an end result. They're coming to an agreement of some sort, possibly in the next week or so, maybe 2 weeks tops, because they want to get this thing done now. They really do. They want to get this deal done and lock him up. And it sounds like things are going well. So based off of what we're hearing, I can only hope that or assume that it's going to get done in the end. And if that's the case and this deal does get done, I swear you have to look at anywhere between 45, 50 million as a starting point, or at least a closing point, where you're going to look at that contract around that, you know, that number for Dak Prescott. And we kind of talked about this before with Dak Prescott and this contract. And then you still have to lock up CeeDee Lamb. So when you give a big deal like that to Dak and lock him in, now you got to turn your sights on CeeDee Lamb. To be honest, like, I think that CeeDee Lamb should have been the number one priority over Dak. Now, again, Dak Prescott is playing really well in his career. He's playing amazing football as a quarterback. But then you also got to look at the future, too, where maybe you don't give all the money to Dak Prescott. Maybe you look at – there's a couple of quarterbacks that you've been grooming, guys like Trey Lance, who you traded for, Cooper Rush, who, when he did get the call to start when Dak Prescott got hurt, played – some people believe he played better than Dak Prescott in this offense. So it's like you have a nice – you have great depth behind Dak. What's the sense of, like, if you can't get a deal done reasonably with Dak Prescott, maybe you do move on from Dak. Maybe you go ahead and you lock up CeeDee Lamb with the big deal, and then you make it a quarterback competition this training camp between Cooper Rush and Trey Lance, who you traded for. And you made investment in Lance in that trade. Let's see if it can pan out, have him go up against Cooper Rush. And then in the very end, you still got a solid quarterback, even if it is just Rush as your starter, where you don't have to pour a crap ton of money to Dak Prescott and lock him in at the later part of his career. So there's a couple different ways they're going about. Right now, it sounds like everything's good. It sounds like they're going to end up locking Dak first and then turn their sights on to CeeDee Lamb. So we'll have to see how this all shakes out. But I know that guys like Cooper Rush, I know like Trey Lance, like I know they don't want to stay backups forever. So it's going to be an interesting situation when it's all said and done.
Yeah, and then moving on to the defense, again, we got a different defensive coordinator for them and a little bit of personnel changes on the defense. I think that's going to be an interesting thing to look at. I think this defense isn't going to be a top five. I think it's going to take a step back with some of the different changes that they had. Yes, I think Micah Parsons, DeMarcus Lawrence still going to do their type of stuff here. But
DeMarcus who?
Yeah,
DeMarcus
exactly.
Who?
Yeah.
Like, what has he done?
Like, yeah, where's he been, right?
Yeah.
So I think the defense, you're going to see a little bit different here, and you're going to see the effects, of having the changeover on the defensive coordinator end.
See,
in the middle, I think, of the linebacker situation.
I think differently. I think that they're still going to have a really good defense. They still have everybody returning, basically. They signed Malik Hooker to fill in that free safety spot. But other than that, I mean, they still got Deron Bland, shutdown corner. They got Trevon Diggs returning. Eric Kendricks, they landed to lock up that middle linebacker spot. And they have some young talent behind him who's seen time. And that D-line, like, it's a really good D-line, minus maybe DeMarcus Lawrence. Because let's face it, Cowboys fans, I know you watch the games. What has DeMarcus Lawrence done for you with this big blockbuster contract that he signed years ago? I mean, he's getting towards the end of his career. The Cowboys know it because they were hoping guys like Sam Williams, who just recently got injured in training camp, sadly is going to miss the season due to injury. They were hoping that he could kind of like maybe take over that position. Not necessarily this season, but at least be in rotation. So all in all, I think that they still got a very, very solid defensive front. Seven, back end, like, I still think they're going to be very good. Now, the interesting part of it is that in this past draft is that they had to fill holes behind the starting lineup, where you notice a lot of new names on the defensive roster, where it be linebacker or D-line or in the back end at corner. So those guys are going to be looked for towards the future of maybe developing to possibly be starters down the road. But I would say as of this year, they're still in good hands with guys like Diggs and Bland in the back end and so forth. So I do think that the Cowboys defense is still going to be very good, especially now that it is healthy in its entirety.
All right. We're covering the NFC East previews right now. Let's move on to now the New York Football Giants, Joe. All right, here we go.
The new and improved.
The new. And are they improved? All right, they can't get any worse than last season.
Are you
right?
Kidding me? Look at what they did.
That's true.
Come
that's
on,
true.
We're going to dive into it right now.
That's true.
So let's just start off with the draft, right? Like, a lot of people were kind of speculating, what are the Giants going to do? Are they going to trade up and get a quarterback and have him compete against Daniel Jones? Like, there was a lot of intrigue with the Giants in this draft, what they were possibly going to do. And they ended up, they didn't get a trade agreed to. They didn't get to trade up. and get a quarterback that, like a lot of people thought, was going to happen. Instead, they stood where they were, and they ended up taking one of the best wide receivers in this draft. And some people believe the best wide receiver in the draft with Malik Nabers from LSU. So I think they got themselves a stud at wide receiver and something that has been missing sorely from this Giants team. Yes, we do know that they've had their woes with the offensive line help and issues there. But, man, this position has been so decimated with just not getting an influx of talent, of young personnel, and now they nail it with Malik Nabers. I think this dude is going to be year one as a rookie is going to be – he's going to be dangerous for any defense. And you're already seeing it at a Giants camp where – you see the chemistry building between Daniel Jones and Nabers, whether it be in coverage, just the chemistry is building so much between those two that I definitely see some success there for the Giants this season. Nabers going to get plenty of opportunities in terms of catching the ball, scoring touchdowns or what have you, but it starts right there with Nabers. After that, you can kind of like say, well, we got Nabers. We got Nabers. Yeah, so you look at the veterans that have been there before, Darius Slayton, mm-hmm. Nobody's really excited about him. Right now he's penciled in as a starter. I hope for God's sake that, because we've seen flashes in training camp just now with Jalin Hyatt kind of making some big plays. And I'm in hopes for the Giants anyways that Hyatt is going to end up taking over Slayton's spot to finally start for the Giants. And then you got Wandell Robinson in the slot, who I'm kind of like a favorite of his. Like, I really do like his talent. I think this guy could be something special for the Giants going forward. And then they also got guys in the back end like Isaiah Hodgins, who's been there before. They got Isaiah McKenzie, who they draft, an older speed type wide receiver. And then there's extra depth beyond that are all trying to make the team. But what I do like is the fact that they still have some young depth here. They also got some veterans. I just hope that they get the right mix right, and I believe it should be Nabers, Hyatt, and Robinson. But we'll see.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you there, too. I mean, I always thought it would be, and I'm wondering what's going on that's holding Jalin Hyatt back. Is it him?
He's making plays in training camp.
And that's what I saw, too. He is making plays because, again, what is our lad seeing that we're not here? Because we've heard the talk throughout the whole training camp, even offseason, Darius Slayton, again, you know, potentially being caught, traded, whatever. He's even heard, you know, we've even heard that, hey, if I'm not making – starting roster that I want, I demand to be traded. Yeah, go right ahead. We're not going to get anything. What, a bag of peanuts for you? You know, I mean, oh my goodness. We're shaking in our boots. You know, yep. You got some serious leverage.
Yep.
A guy that, you know, it was nice to see you in his rookie season with the spot that you ended up drafting him in. It was a pleasant surprise. But since then, has been awful suspect in that big playoff game, that they're in two seasons ago. Big catch that he just dropped, flat out drop. It was to help seal the deal on the game and just drop.
That's
it.
Right.
And that's what lingers, I think, throughout everybody. And that's what you really need in big moments to perform like that. And he didn't. Like you said, looking at the rest of the guys, there's some good talent here. I like the depth. When you talked about what they did a little bit last season with some of the guys, Paris Campbell, stuff like that, you know, he had some pretty good depth. I like the depth this season a lot more than what they've got going on. Again, with just still having Isaiah Hodgins, Jalin Hyatt there, of course, but Isaiah McKenzie, Miles Boykin, Allen Robinson even there. So having this stuff behind there, I'm interested to see what this final starting roster is going to be. And what we're going to see out of Wandale Robinson is big for me as well, just because he's been plagued with injuries. It's nice that you're excited. I'm excited too, but I mean, I would like to see him a lot more than we have here. Cause again, when he's out there, it seems like he can make some plays and you don't get to see him enough. So that's one thing I would like to see this coming season with Daniel Jones on top of the Malik Nabers. Again, you talked about it, getting that guy key right there in that part of the draft early on, getting a receiver, a true number one that Daniel Jones can rely on, and go up and just throw one of those throw it up balls and he can catch it. and this is that guy. You know what I mean? And that's what's great about having him there in this roster here, because you didn't have that for the past couple seasons to help out Daniel Jones in those kinds of rough moments. But
and there's an yeah, there's an opportunity right now for Hyatt and Neighbors. Mm-hmm. If they are to team up, you might potentially get two guys that can do that same
right.
thing.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And to tell you what, I've seen some really good throws by Daniel Jones in this camp too, putting it right where the defender can't even get, like on the number. So not even the fact that just errant passes at all. He's just throwing it out.
You can do that when you don't have pressure.
That is true too.
You know what I mean? Like it is training camp, everybody. Like it's not, we have to temper our expectations a little bit when we watch it, but what you can notice is the fact that there's chemistry being built there. The accuracy is there. The ball placement is there. The playmaking ability of these receivers are there. You know, we're seeing some of these receivers anyway, make some big time plays over the head of defenders and just getting the play done. Then we're going to switch our sights over to offensive line. Offensive line, this is kind of like that next critical position group that is in desperate need of improvement, flat out improvement. Yes, they still have Andrew Thomas. He has improved immensely since entering the NFL. He's locking down that left tackle spot. But what they did end up going out is they went out and got some veterans. They got a veteran presence in guys like Jermaine Illuminor, who can play multiple positions across the offensive line and play them all extremely well. And then they end up bringing – obviously, back is healthy once again. John Michael Schmitz, he was due to be the starter last year but ended up getting hurt leaving last season. And then you also look at guys like John Runyon from Green Bay, the Packers, a guy that has been with the Packers, kind of like been in development mode there in Green Bay. Now finds his way to the Giants. They're actually giving him a legit shot to earn that starting right guard spot. And currently, anyway, Evan Neal is locked in at right tackle. Unfortunately, though, he's on the PUP list right now. He's still a little banged up, can't return to practice just yet. But that all being said, I think what you're looking at here is that they filled a couple of holes that were critical that they didn't have answers to in free agency, adding these vets, and now when you look at this team, even on paper, it's definitely improved on the offensive line. I don't know how much more improved it is, and that's why we got to wait to see some preseason games and see week one of the regular season to see just how much it's gotten better. Also, when you look at the backups, they ended up adding guys like Greg Van Roten, who's with Carmen Brasillo back with the Raiders. He follows him to the Giants, the offensive line coach there. Solid lineman, quite possibly could start in case John Runyon kind of doesn't make an impression. Aaron Stinney, I think, is an interesting signing too. He right now is a backup, but he started for the Buccaneers for quite some time. So they have even – as backups, they still have guys that could fill in and start if their numbers called upon. So I think they've done a good job improving that spot of the ball as well. So it's going to give Giants fans a little bit more confidence into the season. Now, there's definitely a ton of Giants fans that are speculative, and they're just like, well, they tried to do the same thing last year, and it fell apart. Well, maybe. But I'm telling you right now, they've got real good veterans. They're not the flashiest of names. They're not these big time left tackles that you hear about all the time in the news because they just signed a mega $1 million deal. These are guys that are just road graders. They're just vets that have been around for quite some time and they get the job done. So I got some confidence in their offensive line.
I'm glad you do, Joe. The one thing I would say about the New York Giants and their offensive line, I'm glad that Ben Bredesen is no longer on this team now because he was such
He just signed an extension with the Ravens.
Oh, my gosh, dude. He was so terrible. And so God bless him. Goodbye. But that's the only thing that I think I'm afraid of because this is what the Giants do. The Giants do get some of those gritty veterans that you're talking about, but a lot of times they're past their prime, so then they end up being like a problem, you know what I mean? And giving up those sacks and things like that, you know, you're getting them too little too late and they're not building, you know, that offensive line. And that's where the Giants have always been better. If you look at the Super Bowl teams, it's a team that they've built. So That's the only thing I worry about this. But like you said, I think it is an improvement. Like Ben Bredesen is gone, so that's an improvement automatically for me. So I'm excited to see what these guys can do. They just need to give him a little more time here for Daniel Jones to get the ball out there. And I'm excited, you know, when we look at this offense, how different it's going to look. We've already seen some different looks here in camp and what Brian Daboll's offense looks like. A slimmed down Brian Daboll, by the way. I mean, the guy looks good. And it can't be any worse than what Kafka did last year, too. You know, and they were 30th ranked in offense. They got to turn this thing around. They got Malik Nabers on top of it. Brian Daboll's offense. The one thing I will say, too, weak in the tight end spot, especially that Darren Waller retired. I would have liked them trying to get a little more depth there, but we'll see how much they really involve the tight ends in this offense anyways.
You got to remember, too, that Daniel Bellinger, he missed most of last season, really didn't get to further develop or show off his talent last year with Waller being hurt. So Bellinger getting another shot, coming back for his third year, looks like, you know, honestly, or second year, it looks like Daniel Bellinger is going to be that very interesting piece of blocking / receiving type tight end. Like, he is definitely a talented player and athletic tight end. I think he's going to play out well for the Giants. And then they go ahead and they draft in the fourth round Theo Johnson, one of my favorite tight ends coming out of Penn State, who guy is gigantic. Like, he's one of the bigger tight ends in football, 6'6", 270-something pounds. And you wouldn't think about it, but you're like 270, 6'6". He's kind of slow, isn't he? No, he's actually fast. And that's the scary part, is that he's got this big, gigantic size but can block and also just go out for passes. So the one thing that he has to work on, though, and I'm sure the Giants are working on it currently, is that his route running needs to get a little bit better. But other than that, I have confidence in both of these tight ends for the Giants coming into the season. I think they're going to do well. And by no means in Brian Daboll's offense, the tight end isn't that honed in. It's not like that that much of a threat in his offense. It's spotty here and there. So they're not going to be counting on these tight ends to make all the plays. So that's where they haven't had wide receivers. And now that they finally looks like that they might have some talent there, they're going to be able to kind of spread the ball around and then opening up these weaker holes in the defense where these tight ends are going to kind of just take advantage of. So I really like the at least the two tight ends I have confidence in. After that, it's kind of like a, you know, you really don't know what you're going to get. These are camp bodies. Maybe they can make the roster, what have you. Maybe they even look for a veteran after this is all said and done to complete it. But all right,
before we get into the Daniel Jones talk, I want to say hi to Mike Tackett. Mike Tackett's in the house. He's got a question for us.
Hi, Mike.
It's funny. We talked about this before we started getting to the AFC preview episodes, and it's funny that he's going to pose the question to us here. He has a couple of other different things about it, but here you go. He says, which non-playoff team from last year do you guys see making the biggest push for the postseason? For me, it has to be the Jets or the Bengals.
I would say the Jets. I definitely would say the Jets. The Bengals have been there before. Like, the Bengals are capable of doing it again this year. It's not like something where, like, oh, there's no shot, the window closed, yeah, or anything like that. No, I still think that they're one of those teams that are in that group, that cluster, to make it. But the Jets haven't been there in, jeez. I mean, I can't. If they're going to make it to the – or win the division or not, just make it to the playoffs, it's now. They have Rodgers. They have a much improved offensive line. They have really good weapons to throw to. Right. They got a good young running back to run the ball. And their defense, we all know, is top five. And they've improved that too. So, yeah, it has to be the Jets in my mind.
Yeah, it's a good question. And when you think about it, like you said, that you can't – bring up the Bengals because they've been there before. You know what I mean? It's too recent. So you're talking about biggest push. I would have to probably say the Jets, too.
You could even argue the Dolphins.
No.
You can.
No. They that weren't in the playoffs, right? Non-playoff team from last year. Dolphins were in the playoffs last year.
All right, give me all the teams that didn't make the playoffs, and I'll tell you another team.
What about the Titans, Joe? What do you think if the Titans sneak somehow into the playoffs? Isn't that a pretty big push here again from what they've gone through? They don't have Derrick Henry anymore, but, you know, Will Levis now, year two as a starter, see what they can do now with another additional weapons here, wide receiver. How about the Titans? How about that? Why not? That's a sneaky pick right there.
Possibly. I mean, it's possible, but they do have a new,
I guess,
they have a new regime. So there's a lot of teaching going on too. Like I still think that they can make a push for that division.
Mm-hmm.
I got one. I don't think they'll win the division, but I think that they can make a push.
I got one. You know what? That wasn't there, but then returning, that wasn't there last season, the Jacksonville Jaguars. How about that?
I disagree.
There you go. Well, that's mine. The Jags. How about that?
I definitely don't think they're going to make it.
All right, so let's get back to the NFC East and the New York Giants. We talked about the offense, not so much about Daniel Jones, but everybody pretty much knows what's got to get done. He's got to show something again just to prove that he can stay on the team. Depending on whatever, talk about money and all the other bullshit, you're already past that. We're talking about being able to produce. You have weapons now under Brian Daboll's offense. It's time to get this team cooking here, do something here, and they got to get it done now. Or else it could be Brian Daboll's head on the chopping block pretty soon, too. We've followed and seen what the Giants are looking like in the offseason on Hard Knocks and stuff like that. And we've heard the ownership talk about this type of situation, too. They're not afraid to move on again and try and rebuild again to get something going here. So it's go time for this offense. It should be better. Again, you can't get much worse than 30th. You got 31st, 32nd. But come on. You got to be able to do something here with what you got going on. And I'm excited to see what this defense can do this season.
The one thing that I can say got worse for the Giants is their running backs. That's the one thing. Devin Singletary, I don't have any confidence in at all. Mm-hmm. Yes, he had a successful season with Houston. But honestly, like for the Giants, he's not the type of running back that you normally see with this offense, where you have a guy who's very dynamic, who has the size, who can break tackles, who can also make people miss. Singletary doesn't really break tackles that often. Like he gets shoestring tackled a lot of times, where a guy just puts his arm out and he trips over it. So definitely a gifted athlete in terms of being out in the open, catching the ball, the backfield. I feel like that's where he's going. That's his niche. That's like where he's really good at, yards after the catch. But as far as between the tackles, I don't know. I don't think he's the right guy for them. And then you got guys like Eric Gray that they drafted in 23, who obviously he's going to make a play for the starting job. And the rookie that they drafted this year currently in the fifth round, and Tyrone Tracy Jr., mm-hmm. who I actually really liked this kid. I just don't think he has enough experience at the running back position, because in college he played it for 1 year. The other 3 years he played as wide receiver. So definitely another kind of like very well-built type of body type for running back, but also he can break tackles. He's stronger than you think. So I'm kind of hoping that maybe Tyrone can make a name for himself, or at least carve out some serious reps the start of the season.
Devin Singletary, he has success in this particular offense, Brian Daboll's offense, so I could see where it kind of works for them. Again, he's not no Saquon Barkley like they had, so this is what you're dealt with. But I think he can be effective in what this offense can
do. He had success in this offense?
Yes.
When did he play?
When he played with the Bills, when Brian Daboll was there.
He did?
Yeah. And then, so now.
I don't think he's that good.
Well, he's not as good as Saquon Barkley. We already know that. But, I mean, he can work in this offense. And we already know that the running backs aren't very good here. I don't think Gray's going to push for anything. If anything, like I said, I'm interested to see what Tracy can kind of do for this team. But after Singletary, I mean, it gets even worse. So I don't think running back is going to be a major focal point of this offense, though. I think they're just going to
sprinkle. Well, you need it.
I understand that. But that's what I mean. He has been successful with Brian Daboll. So why wouldn't he even think that he could potentially
do it? So what did he do with the Bills?
Last year, he did very well, running the ball.
Did he have over 1,000 yards or anything?
Yes, he did. But it's, like I said, he's not Saquon Barkley. I'm on board with you like that. Like I said, I'm not high on Singletary, but to say that he's not going to have success and does not know what to do in his offense, I think is just wrong. Paul Maddie's in the house. He says, greetings from Playa Linda Beach. Hey, it's been a long time since I don't know if we've even had Paul Maddie on this show, have we, Joe?
No.
No, pleasure to have you on this show here, Paul Matty. Pleasure to have you. And Mike Tackett says, here you go, Joe. He's got the non-playoff teams. Jets, Patriots, Colts, Jags, Titans, Bengals, Raiders. Okay. Broncos, Chargers, Giants, Commanders, Bears, Vikings, Saints, Falcons. What about the Falcons, Joe? What do you think about that?
The Falcons, I think they have a shot. They definitely have a legit shot because they have the right quarterback to lead those young, talented weapons.
Right.
And a good offensive line is already there. So they have the recipe, at least on offense. Like the defense is actually top 15, dare if I say bottom top 10 type style defense. They were actually really good last year when they were healthy early on in the season. But when you look at them now, like they still got to figure some things out. They did add to that defensive side of the ball, and I do think that they could make a push. Maybe not win the division, but man, they're going to be one of those serious contenders for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's easier to see when you got the teams out there. You know, where they get a better idea of stuff. Because even you know, you got the Vikings out there, the Seahawks, Cards, Panthers, I'm not sold on any of that. But a lot of people would probably even mention, because they're so high on Caleb Williams, about the Bears potentially being that non-playoff team that can, you know, go all the way or at least into the playoffs. That seems like the team. When I talked to Brian Noe earlier tonight, that's kind of what I was wondering if he was going to say some of those, because a lot of people are big, ultra-hyped on the Bears right now. It's almost out of proportion, you know. I mean, like, wow, what made you guys flip the script like that much, you know, with this team? You know, it can't be all just Caleb Williams on there. I know they added, you know, weapons here and things like that, but for people to just, you know, say now they're all of a sudden they're going to make a push in the playoffs, I would pump the brakes a little bit on that one. Mike Tackett says also, how is Matt Patricia not coaching defense anywhere? I'd argue that he's better than more experienced than New York's new DC, Shane Bowen. That would be interesting. Yeah, that is kind of a head scratcher there too, because I thought he did pretty well as a defensive coordinator. But
he did until he started going team to team. Like, his defense never played well with the Lions when he was the head coach. Mm-hmm. When he came back to New England, he still didn't do anything there. They already had their guy, and then now that you look at him. What you did hear before he got ousted as a head coach is that players don't respond to him. Players don't like him. He's just like this guy that's very anti-personal and is all about business. And I get it. You're coaching. Like, it shouldn't be about getting along with any of the players or whatnot. But he rubbed a lot of players the wrong way, and it kind of like had a ripple effect where nobody wanted to listen to him. And if you can't get the players to buy in to your system or what you're trying to teach, it's just not going to work anyway. So I feel like the league probably saw that, heard about it, and they're just like, well, he does run a sophisticated defensive scheme, which is hard to teach. And then if your teacher isn't that good to kind of respond to the new talent coming in, then it's just never going to work.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're still talking about here the NFC East and the New York Giants. We'll just focus on the defense real quick, and then we'll move on to the next team.
Yeah, the one thing is maybe Devin Singletary can reach 1,000 yards this year. Maybe. We'll see. It does depend on the offensive line.
Right, right. And I don't even expect that even out of him this year. You know what I mean? Because, again, I know he's just kind of that guy to be there now, knows the system.
He doesn't know the system.
I'd say they're going to probably draft a running back this next season.
Oh, they have to.
So that's the idea. But that's what I'm saying. He's just going to be a nice person to fit into this system that he knows, and I think he's going to do okay with it.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I'll say in his 5-year career so far, that he just still hasn't been able to eclipse 1,000 yards. And some of those some of that yardage is catching the ball. It's not really running the ball. So it'll be interesting to see. I know he's a familiar face for Brian, and maybe they're hoping they can get a little bit out of him. But we'll see how it all shakes out. I kind of hope that Tyrone kind of gets some playing time too. Defensively, defense is going to be a little bit different though. They're still pretty stout now that they got that trade for Brian Burns. They bring him over to play opposite. They're injured, or Kayvon Thibodeau is injured right now, missing some practice time. But he's looking to play opposite Brian Burns, which I feel like is a really good tandem, and two players that are going to feed off each other, definitely going to be attacking the quarterbacks and getting after the running backs in the backfield. But other than that, like you look at the interior of this defensive line too, where it looks like they're going to be going to a 3-4 scheme. They got some big, big bull bodies up front where they're going to eat up double blocks and you're just going to not be able to, you're not going to be able to move them. They're just going to be stuck in the trenches. Raheem Nunez-Roches, who came over from Tampa Bay, formerly of the 49ers, a very good D tackle, but has the size to play 3-4 D end. And then you have Dexter Lawrence, of course, locking down that nose tackle position. Jordan Phillips, who I really do like, I think this is a good signing for the Giants, bringing him from the Bills to be that extra D end or even D tackle that you want to call him in that front three there. I think that right there, to couple that with Bobby Okereke and Micah McFadden, who both have showed promise with the Giants, and you have Burns and Thibodeau rushing off the edge, I feel like their front seven is going to be very good for this defense. After that, you look at the corners, you look at the back end of this defense. You got Tyler Newbin, who they drafted in the second round to fill in that safety, that void there at safety for the Giants. I actually really like Tyler Newbin coming out of the draft. I thought that he was the best safety, hands down, and that's why he ended up getting taken in the second round. But then you also got guys returning, too, like a Drew like a Devontae Banks, who started in the beginning, but then ended up losing his job, as the season progressed. But I still just think it's a confidence thing. Being new to the league last year, I think he's going to develop. He's going to be just fine this year, gaining some confidence. And then, other than that, you see a lot of youth in this secondary. So with that youth in the secondary, this season, I feel like for the Giants, at least on the back end, there might be some communication issues from time to time where a guy thought he was supposed to be somewhere else and he wasn't. He was supposed to stay home, and those type of things they're going to have to iron out over time. But all in all, I think it's going to be basically throw them out, trial by fire, until they can come together as a unit.
Yeah, again, I mean, I like the way the look of this defense looks a lot better, especially once we got Brian Burns here in the house. I mean, that was a big add for the defense. I am interested to see how it is going to look because even like Mike Tackett said, different defensive coordinator. I don't think Wink Martindale was part of the problem at all last season.
No,
that just
no, not
they
at
kind
all.
Of butted not heads and things like that towards the end. And
yeah,
somebody had to pay the price at one point. Kind of an unsung hero here for this defense, Cordell Flott. This guy has been on the team for a few years now, and not really expected to do a whole lot here, and then now has found his way into the starting position here and looking really good here. But one thing I think we do need to see here, Deontay Banks, he's got to be our number one. Our starter that's going to be on the number one receiver. And he got kind of, like you're talking about trial by fire. That was last year. He did good at times, but then other times he was hung out to dry. He needs to do a little better this year, grow into that. But I think this pass rush that they have now this season is going to help some of that too. Because, again, not getting the ability to get to the quarterback leaves them out there longer to try and cover and things like that, and that's when you run into trouble and stuff. So I think the additions that they had on top of it, especially a healthy Dexter Lawrence here too, would be good for this team here. And I see better things, especially even a healthy Micah McFadden, because he made some really big plays before he got injured last season. So he's one of those ball hawks that, even in the run game, he evaluates the play and can get to where the ball is and make that tackle. And that's what's big for these guys is those tackles. All right, moving on now. Next, as we're covering the NFC East, we're going to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles. Joe, take it away.
Wide receivers, here we go. You got A.J. Brown, they locked him up. You got Devontae Smith, they locked him up this year. Like, they didn't waste any time in signing and locking those guys down, unlike other teams that are still waiting. But they recognized their superstars. They got the deals done for both of them. I thought it was kind of surprising, honestly, that, like a guy like Devonta Smith signed a deal, and then I'm like, I instantly thought like, oh, AJ Brown's definitely going to want a new deal now. Like, he's going to stir the pot. He's definitely going to be looking for an extension. What does that mean for training camp coming up? And then boom, like almost like hours or a day or two away, then AJ Brown lands an extension too. So it's like they knew what they were doing. Howie Roseman, the GM of the Eagles, one of the best GMs in football right now. He just got the job done, executed it. So now both players are happy. Both are at practice, and things are looking good for the Eagles going forward in terms of wide receivers. Paris Campbell, I'm kind of perplexed that the Eagles signed him. Like, I understand they were looking for more depth at the position, but the guy really hasn't shown anything no matter where he's been. He got drafted by the Colts. He's been on the Giants. Now he's with the Eagles. And honestly, I kind of think that position right there is open for grabs. Anybody can kind of win that job at this point as Paris Campbell is penciled in. They did draft in the fifth round Johnny Wilson, who they kind of like, guy who's like got tremendous size, very big, like 245, 250, and he's like 6'6", like what type of wide receiver. Is faster than he looks, which is surprising, but again, I feel like in the slot, he would work perfectly there, and you got tremendous size to throw to. I feel like that makes a lot of sense. And then you also got guys like Anais Smith, who could potentially make a push for that starting job too. Overall, I feel like the Eagles are in a good spot with youth and the fact that they've locked down their two superstars at wide receiver in that grouping. So I'm not crazy about Paris Campbell. I don't think he can really hold on to this job because – honestly, what has he done his whole career but been a backup? So mm-hmm. I think as long as like the younger guys like Johnny Wilson, Anais Smith, if they can kind of get a grasp of the playbook and show that in training camp, I definitely feel like one of those guys will win the job.
Yeah, I mean, again, you got your penciled in first two starters. That's legit there. Again, at the slot position, like you said, Paris Campbell, the Giants, we got to see him last year, and not very impressive here. So they do go and get those younger guys. So that makes sense. That if these guys can show any kind of potential here to move forward, I could see him moving out of that spot too as well. So this team, I think, is still going to do well the way this offense is run, whether you got, you know, the depth of wide receiver or not, too. We've remember seeing them do some stuff when they have in Arcega Whiteside and things like that. You're kind of like, man, if they only even had some extra besides that, but they were still making the playoffs and making the push there. So I could see them kind of to come back with some vengeance this year again, but you know, at that center position, you got somebody else there now, Joe.
Yeah, you know, and it's a familiar face as a backup for the Eagles. But Cam Jurgens, who was drafted in 22, and honestly, this is a guy that's been up and coming for Philly. Like, he's been waiting in the wings, waiting for his time. And of course, you're not going to kick out Mr. Jason Kelce if he doesn't want to leave. Like, he's one of the best centers to ever play the game. So, of course, they wanted to keep bringing him back one year and after another. But now it's Cam Jurgens' time to shine. You know, he's been waiting in the wings. He's learned from Jason Kelce. He's definitely learned, like, little hidden pointers about playing center at the next level from Jason Kelce. And now it's up to Cam. And I think Cam Jurgens is well prepared for this role, is well prepared to take over, and to the point where I'm not comparing him to Jason Kelce, but what I'm saying is that he's definitely has been ready for quite some time, and now that he gets a chance to take over, I feel like the Eagles won't miss much of a beat. Like, the only question that I have for Cam Jurgens is, has he worked on the brotherly shove enough? Because Jason Kelce was probably like the most amazing athletic offensive center to be able to pull that off and pull it off successfully. Mm-hmm. So that to me is probably maybe the only question mark, I guess, that I have about Cam taking over is, will the Eagles still be able to do it as successfully? So, but that we'll wait until we get to the season for that one. But at left tackle, you got Jordan Mailata, who's been there since 2018, locking that side up. Landon Dickerson, you hear a lot of the same names for Philly. Mm-hmm. Tyler Steen at right guard. Lane Johnson still playing. Like this guy, I feel like this guy's been playing for like 25 years, it feels like, but he's still there, still able to lock it down there. Now, again, he's faced some injury issues here and there, but again, he's definitely a big part of this offensive line grouping. And then when you look at the backup spots where, you know, they bring in a guy like Matt Hennessy, free agent from Atlanta, who started for Atlanta at one point, but now in a backup role, it's like tremendous value. You got another proven vet. And then a guy that you guys might remember, not because his name was in lights and everybody loved him, but Mekhi Becton from the Jets ends up signing a deal to back up Lane Johnson. And I think this is a brilliant move by Howie Roseman. He does this a lot. He has great decision-making skills. And as much as everyone wants to say, well, Mekhi's a bust, he hasn't been able to do anything. Well, maybe not with the Jets, but he is still in the prime. He's only 25 years old. And maybe with the change of scenery, maybe with a different training staff, a different team, maybe he could stay healthy for them and just be a solid backup for Lane Johnson and maybe eventually be the starter for them at right tackle. So I think overall, not only they have tremendous depth at offensive line, but they have one hell of a starting lineup to go with it.
All right, let's go on to now the running back position here. You talk about the brotherly shove. Maybe they won't need it so much here. If, say, now that they got Saquon Barkley here, a good running back here in the backfield, which they've had some decent guys too. They've been kind of spelling back and forth. They didn't out Kenneth Gainwell still there too as well, but Saquon Barkley signed him here to be that bell cow that they can rely on. Yes, you, like you said, don't have the full depth of the wide receivers here, but Saquon Barkley, a nice net here behind Jalen Hurts. One thing I would like to see this season is Jalen Hurts kind of just be him. It seemed like they kind of, I don't know if it was just him being reserved or they kind of like told him to, you know, not run so much because of your smaller stature or not. But it seemed like he's more effective when he's getting his wheels going and moving around in the pocket and getting out of the pocket and making some plays with his legs. And towards the end of the season, like second half, seemed like he kind of stopped doing a lot of that. And he was just trying to air it out and maybe almost showing like what Lamar Jackson does sometimes to show that he can throw the ball and run his offense that way and just keep throwing it around. But I would like to see him kind of be a little bit more of that jackknife type of player here, the little Swiss Army knife that he is, and do that here, run this offense. And you've got that safety net of Saquon Barkley in the backfield that can only help him.
You got to wonder, too, about Jalen Hurts' mentality. Is he starting to be grouped up as a Lamar Jackson-ish type of quarterback? Where, like, we all know that he can run. We all know that he's successful at it. And maybe he was doing it so much where people started to kind of get on him about it. And now he's kind of – then he last season he was like, oh, well, I'm not going to run as much. I'm going to throw more. And it makes you wonder – because, like, Lamar Jackson did the same thing in the playoffs where in the second half, what was working in the first half should have continued to do in the second half. And that's because the Chiefs didn't have an answer for Lamar Jackson's mobility. And then in the second half, he just stopped doing that because he wanted to prove that he could still throw the ball as much as Patrick Mahomes. Didn't work out so well. So I wonder if, like, maybe last season was a little bit of that for Jalen, where I'm not saying people were getting to him or getting in his head, but – at the same time, you want to be known – if you're a quarterback in that league, you want to be known as a quarterback only. And I wonder, because of his mobility, because of the plays that he was able to make with his arm, maybe he started to you know what? I'm going to throw for 400 yards this game or something like that. Maybe not, but it's just kind of weird, like you said, that it almost looked like he was a little bit of a different player. So we'll have to wait and see this season if that's just kind of like a mirage that we saw last year or maybe it's really the new him in this offense. So I feel like if that's the case and they are trying to limit him in his mobility and to not get hurt and to be safer that way, it's not going to work for the long haul. It's not going to get you a Super Bowl championship. What can get you a Super Bowl championship is by unleashing Jalen Hurts in his full capacity. Don't limit him, much like Washington did with RG3. That's the same thing that happened with him. Is he instantly became unsuccessful when they tried to make a pocket quarterback.
Right.
You can't do that. Let the talent be the talent.
Right, that's almost like, you know, and again, it's on a different terms, but it's almost like telling Patrick Mahomes to not be Patrick Mahomes when he made a lot of plays, especially in the Super Bowl, with his legs. very much. I mean, yes, you know, he could make some, you know, great throws and things like that, stuff like that. And he was banged up, but the plays that mattered was what he did with his legs. And if you try and tell him, no, don't run, look for a guy, it's a different story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he is not him.
Let him feel the game.
That's what they've got to do. They got to let him be them. And that's what it kind of seemed like to me, possibly. Because we are hearing that there is even a little, you know, the differences between, you know, with the head coach and Jalen Hurts right now too. So we'll see if that's true or not. But
they've talked about that last season, and both of them came out and be like, we don't know what people were talking about. Like, we're fine. Like, we're good. Like, stop listening to media, everybody.
All right, let's take a look at their defense quick here, Joe.
Before we get there, we got the tight end grouping. Got Dallas Goedert, who obviously, if you don't know him in fantasy, get to know him because Jalen Hurts looks for him a lot, especially in the red zone. Very good player. And then, like we talked about the running backs with Saquon, everybody knows Saquon, but what they don't know is the kid out of Clemson from Will Shipley in the fourth round that they drafted. I feel like this is an excellent pick. When you look at this running back, just a hard-nosed running back. Like, he doesn't look the most athletic. He isn't the fastest. He's not the most elusive. But for somehow, some way, he just manages to gain yards by any means necessary. So I think he's an excellent complement for Saquon. Going into the defense, we look at the defense. The offense is stacked. The defense is stacked. This team is just flat out has no weaknesses, really. And then you think about the draft this past draft here. They were able to land the consensus top corner by many people in Quinyon Mitchell, and that was a need of theirs. And they were picking in the 20s. Like, they were able to stay there and still get one of, if not the top corner coming out in the draft. That's just amazing to me. And it seems like this happens for the Eagles every year where they just kind of – it's almost like they're such a lucky team that when they need a certain position or a player fall down to them, it just happens that way. They never have to trade up. So that's amazing in itself. And then you team him up with guys that have returned to the Eagles. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, formerly of the Eagles. He's back again as a safety, and he's going to fit extremely well with this team. He's back with the old boys. Reed Blankenship has also made a name for himself in Philly. Kaylee Ringo, who was drafted in 23, looks to improve his game from last year. You look at this defensive line, it is super stout in the middle with Jordan Davis, Jalen Carter, and then the pass rushers they have. From the Jets, they end up getting Bryce Huff, one of the better pass rushers last year, double-digit sacks, was a maniac on the football field. And, yeah, they still have guys like Brandon Graham as penciled as a backup, like a guy who still gets it done. Yeah, he's at the end of his career, but he's still doing it, you know? Milton Williams on the other side. And then you get your linebackers. You got an influx of new linebackers now after losing guys like TJ Edwards and what have you. They replace him with guys like Zach Bond, a young up-and-coming linebacker. Devin White, everybody remembers him in Tampa. He just fits into the hole here. And it's amazing to me that a team that had holes on offense, a little bit on offense, more holes on defense, they're able to not only just draft them or sign some guys they're not going to miss a beat. They're pushing for a chip. Once again, and this is a very stacked roster. I mean, I can't find much of a weakness. Maybe you could say inexperience for Quinyon Mitchell, but man, is he a special breed?
All right, yeah, I don't really have much to argue with on the defense there. They're definitely going to make a push for the division and another one into the playoffs. All right, let's move on to now the Washington Commanders, Joe.
This is an interesting team, to say the least.
It is an interesting team, I guess. But interesting not being – I think I've heard some analysts say that they –
That's the problem.
See, you know, that's – I know.
Listen, analysts.
You want to talk about non-playoff teams making a push this season. Some people have nominated this team to be that team to do it.
No.
And I disagree too as well. No. But, I mean, they have made some improvements. I'm just interested to see what it's all going to look like when it's all said and done.
The one thing that I'll say is, like, they had a major weakness on offensive line. Not so much wide receiver. I know some people kind of pointed at that, and I kind of scratched my head. I'm like, well, they got Jahan Dotson, pretty good wide receiver. They got Terry McLaurin. Obviously, everybody knows him. He's pretty darn good. After that, though, it was kind of like, you know, they had I'm going to forget his name right now. Samuel.
Yeah, Curtis Samuel.
They had Curtis Samuel there last year. They needed to replace him. They ended up drafting in the third round Luke McCaffrey. Now, if you remember the last name, Eric McCaffrey, he is a brother of Christian McCaffrey. And he played. The interesting part with him is that he was formerly a college quarterback and converted in his senior year. It wasn't like a midway point he decided this, but for his senior year, wanted to play wide receiver and lock in there. So late bloomer to the wide receiving core, but nonetheless, a gifted athlete with the McCaffrey family. And he's looking to start in the slot, which is interesting. They've always had, beyond their starters, they've always had like this cluster of depth. Where and it's not nobody's like big names or anything like that, but guys that can come in if needed and just be able to participate, just be able to make a play here and there. Guys like Daomi Brown, who last year kind of made a name for himself with this team. Mm-hmm. You know, Olamide Zaccheaus from Atlanta was kind of like a rotational backup with the Atlanta Falcons. And with the Eagles, and now he comes to Washington, and then you also got guys like Demir Byrd and Jameson Crowder. Obviously, you know him from years ago. But there's a motto to this: is the fact that they never want to be caught with not enough talent in that position where because you go through injuries, and receivers just like running backs, they tend to fall like crazy. So they are definitely fully prepared in terms of depth. They have some talent there, wide receiver, and I think they're in a good spot in that group.
Yeah. I mean, again, not too bad. I think they have room to grow, but I've seen them do pretty good damage here, just even with having Terry McLaurin here with the wide receiver position here and Dotson. So I think they'll be okay. I'm interested to see what Luke McCaffrey does for this team. You know the pedigree and stuff like that this family has, so you can only expect some good things from them. And like you said, some familiar faces, especially ones to their new head coach, Dan Quinn. So one thing I do expect out of Dan Quinn with this one, now the defense will see improvement too. Last year, again, it's supposed to be a defensive specialty. Not so good, 32nd in the league. I see them making a changeover and doing a lot better here on the defensive side of the ball. But, again, big key part for them was drafting the quarterback in Jaden Daniels here to change this franchise around, get something to get excited about, and a guy that's pretty dynamic here with the moves that this guy has to run this offense. I'm excited to see what this team has to offer, to see what they're going to look like. Because we haven't seen much of anything in a while because, again, they haven't been able to figure out that quarterback position. It's been the number one thing when they thought they were getting Alex Smith after a good come off a year with the Chiefs and then going down with injuries and stuff like that. Since then, you know, they've had a hodgepodge of guys and they just haven't panned out. So now, again, they draft their guy. It's going to be the key to this offense here, and that's the most exciting thing to look at with this offense.
Yeah, Jaden Daniels is my number one quarterback coming out. I absolutely love this kid. I think he's going to develop to be a superstar in the NFL. And Washington ended up getting him, which is a team that, like you said, is much need of an upgrade at that position. I really like that. I like the fact that they have a guy who has similar traits in Marcus Mariota with him. For this offense, because it is ran by Cliff Kingsbury, a guy who, if you remember, was the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals when they drafted Kyler Murray, a guy that really loves mobile quarterbacks that can also throw it. Now, the difference is with Jaden is he is taller than Kyler Murray, and that's not hard to do, but a guy that can do everything extremely well, run game, pass game, and what have you. Now, offensive line was a big critical problem for them last year. We know that they didn't have as much success because they couldn't put points on the board. Your defense can't do much because they're always on the football field because of that. So they were just doomed to fail last year, but they managed to pick up some promising veterans that are going to come in and start right away. Tyler Biadasz, Nick Allegretti from Kansas City, Cornelius Lucas from Chicago. Sam Cosmi, and then Andrew Wiley, who formerly played with the Chiefs. Now, it's interesting because they've grabbed not only just all veterans here to fill this offensive lineup, but also they're all proven veterans. They're all guys that have been there, done that, and have done it at a high level. So I really do believe that the offensive line for this Washington team is not only just much more improved, but also this is going to give them an influx of confidence going into the season. With a very young quarterback, this is going to be huge for them. And then when you look at their tight end position, a guy by the name of Zach Ertz, who used to be with the Eagles, is now back in the division with the Washington Commanders. That's an interesting signing because they haven't really had that go-to type of tight end until now. The guy, yes, he's at the end of his career, but he still can get the job done. And they also drafted in the second round Ben Sinnott, who they're hoping that could groom into being a starter. Running backs-wise, you got guys like Brian Robinson Jr. and Austin Eckler as a new addition to this backfield. I feel like that's a great tandem now for Washington. They got two guys that can do things in the passing game. They can block in the backfield, and they can also run between the tackles very well. So overall, this offense in its entirety is much more improved and a team that is definitely on the rise. Now, I don't think, like we said before, we don't see them making any major waves this year, but they definitely look better, especially on the offensive side. And just like Jim mentioned on the defense, with Dan Quinn now heading it up, you saw major changes, a huge overhaul of players coming and going on the defensive side. You look at the Dallas Cowboys, Dorrance Armstrong coming over with Dan Quinn. You saw several players that are familiar with Dan Quinn, like a Bobby Wagner, following him here to Washington. And then you have guys like Michael Davis from the Chargers, going to be one of the corners there. Mike Sanders still from Michigan in the draft. They got him in the second round, a guy who was seen as the best nickel corner coming out, and they managed to grab him in a much-needed position. Overall, you look at all these free agent acquisitions that they have from head to toe on the defense, and they've picked specific players that fit Dan Quinn's scheme and can work together in this offense. Now, it might be a little bit shaky early on because of chemistry. These guys haven't played together. It's all new to them. They're learning this scheme. But once they do, once it clicks, this defense is going to be one of the better defenses. I know some people are going to laugh at that, but Dan Quinn is a very good defensive coordinator. And once these guys all get it together, guys like Frankie Louvu, Clelin Ferrell, Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne have been there already. Yeah. But then the secondary, Jeremy Chinn coming over from Carolina, a lot of changes. Like basically it's just almost every position was added to and changed. And they also got, a couple of draft picks that are up and coming, guys like Jordan McGee, fifth round pick for a middle linebacker, and Jerzon Newton, who they're really excited about to play D tackle, D end. He can do everything well. So all in all, I think this team has not only drastically improved from head to toe offense and defense, but also a team that might not get it done early, might lose some games early on, but then once everybody comes together and gets this all ironed out, they're going to be a tough team to get a loss from.
Yeah, I think they're going to be better on defense, like I said, and then I think their offense is going to be really – play action, run base, kind of get that going. But then, like I said, you've got Terry McLaurin here in your back pocket and Dotson. It's going to be play out nicely, I think, with the way this offense is going to be. It's going to be pretty fair balanced, I think. But again, Bijan Robinson, those guys, and Austin Eckler in the passing game on top of that. What a great 1-2 tandem. Like a lot of people would be loving to have that backfield right now. I know I would as a Giants fan right now. I would take Bijan Robinson and Austin Eckler as my backfield over what I have right now. Absolutely.
So Brian Johnson.
Brian Johnson Jr. Yeah. I mean, that's just crazy. So, I mean, it's just
yeah,
way
know,
better than what
isn't
the Giants
that a little
have.
Interesting too is the fact that like there. It hasn't been like this before in the offseason when it came to running back free agents, where there was so many like top end starting free agents available. Austin Eckler, the list went on. You know what I mean? Like Derrick Henry was available. I mean, it was just insane. You know, Saquon Barkley was a free agent. Josh Jacobs was a free agent. There were so many. I've never seen that before. And I thought for sure that a lot of teams were just going to be like, boom, sign real quick. And it really wasn't like that. It took a little while. So we'll see if it all pays off for the guys that got the big bucks, you know. But
all right,
that's it for the NFC East.
That's right. Well, here it's time to do our picks here, Joe. Early, way too early picks here for the division. So what do you got here? Who's taking the division?
Oh, it's your division. You pick it first.
Mine first?
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the Giants then. No, I'm going to say it's going to be probably the Cowboys go back, and then I'm going to go Eagles, then Giants, and then the Commanders. There you go. That was easy.
Yeah, I'm going to go Eagles, Cowboys, Giants, Washington.
Mm-mm-mm. There you go. Just a little bit different, huh? Okay, yeah, so who knows? We'll find out. It's going to be an exciting, I think, division, because I think if the Giants can get this offense going here too, and with what the Commanders have been able to do, I think some of these rivalry games will get a little more heated and a little more intense this upcoming season. So I'm excited. And next week we'll be talking about NFC North.
Yeah, next division.
The Kings of the North. So that's going to be an exciting division to look at, too, as well. We appreciate everybody hanging with us this long night here.
It was a good one.
Brian Noe early on with us. So after this, you guys want to check it out. Check out the video, and we will be posting again over all of our media outlets, too, to check out the interview and isolate it, too, by itself. Brian Noe from Fox Sports Radio.
You know what else they can check out?
I'm talking to him. It's always a good time.
You know what else they can check out?
What's up?
They can also check more of us.
That's right.
They can check more of us out over at grumblingsmedia.com. Mm-hmm. Also on YouTube and rumble.com. If you go to YouTube, please do us a huge favor. Hit those thumbs up. Hit the subscribe button. Make sure you share it to everybody that you know that loves football talk. And also, don't forget to drop in the comments. We can't say this and emphasize this enough. Every single week we do go live Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern. If you comment, we will react. You got a question mark or a question, you got an opinion about something, and it doesn't even have to be about what we're talking about. It could be anything NFL related. We are going to react to it. We will answer you guys. We are the most interactive NFL talk show out there. We want to prove it to you guys, so make sure you chime in every Tuesday night. You can also get us anywhere you take us on the go with your podcast, Apple, Google, Spotify, and Pandora. That's it. We're done.